Do I need to know Italian to work as a marketing expat in Italy?
Ciao, siamo Gabriele e Angelique. Benvenuti nel nostro podcast. We are passionate language learners and we record for you the language learning podcast we'd like to play when we learn new languages.
Our podcast, produced in mixed English and simple Italian, helps beginners and intermediate Italian language learners enjoy engaging content about Italy, its language, and its culture from day zero of their language learning journey.
Marketing in Europe can be challenging because of its multicultural environment.
Rather than seeing it as an obstacle, one can turn it into an opportunity.
This is what you will discover today through our conversation with Marta Romao.
For Portuguese, Marta had a unique childhood. Having been born in Lisbon in the 90s, she lived in Belgium with her family until she was six.
This experience opened her world.
Instead of pursuing an average Portuguese lifestyle, she ventured out of her home country by working as a multilingual marketing professional in Spain and in Italy.
In this episode, we had a chat with Marta about her life, her experience in the Italian marketing scene, as well as working with Italian tech startups in Rome. This episode will conclude our second season of the Italian Escape podcast. We will be taking a break and hopefully launch our third season after summer. If you want us to cover any topic of interest, send us an email and we'll happily talk about it when we come back.
In the meantime, support our podcast, leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify, and join our Patreon community. Listen now to our conversation with Marta. So welcome to the Italian Escape podcast. And for today, we have a special guest, an old friend of mine back in the days when I did Erasmus Mundus, and her name is Marta Romao. So Marta Romao, as you can tell from the name, is not Italian. She's from Portugal, from Lisbon, and she decided after some time to work in Italy. And today we want to talk to her about her life in general, and also how she decided to stay in Italy and what she does. So I'll give the floor to Marta and also introducing my co-host, Gabriele.
Ciao a tutti e ciao Marta, benvenuta.
Ciao Gabriele, ciao Angelique.
Ciao. So first of all, I wanted to ask, like, how has it been for you, like, growing up in Lisbon and then deciding to come to Italy? But I mean, there is a lot of chapters in that story in between, so maybe you could try to introduce our listeners your life story, maybe.
Sure. That's a really good question, because it was a little bit by chance, you know. Even when we met in Genova during my Erasmus time as well, it was a little bit by chance, because I heard there were some free spots to do Erasmus. And I decided to apply. So, you know, it wasn't really planned, but it ended up being really nice. I think the fact that I grew up also in different countries, because I'm from Lisbon, but until I was 6 years, so from 2 to 6, I lived in Belgium with my parents. My father worked in Brussels and we moved there. So I remember at kindergarten, I had a lot of friends from different countries. I remember my best friends were from Finland and Japan. So I think it's kind of, you are a kid, you speak made up languages and a bit of French and a bit of whatever. So I think that helped me a lot, being more aware of the different cultures and being curious and open to it. It's true that I grew up in Lisbon, so I still feel Portuguese, and I think I have really strong roots because I grew up there. Both of my parents are from there. So I kind of really identify with my country, but I really like to be in other places as well.
But how did you eventually start going to the other countries by yourself? Like, because in Portugal, I don't really, it's hard. I don't find that many Portuguese, I think, going out of the country and staying out in the country for that long period maybe a few, and I'm lucky to have met some, but not many go out and leave their comfort zones.
I understand your question. So first time by myself, I did like a gap year before university. I didn't enter the course that I really wanted to. I chose only one option and everyone was like, you should put B and C. And I was like, no, it's A or nothing. So it was nothing. So I decided to do this sabbatical, and I decided to work, to save up some money. And then I was like, okay, let's study languages in a different country. And then I went to France before going to university for a couple of months just to learn French better. And it was really fun. So I tried to did it again in Erasmus, and then I stayed abroad. But you're right. You know, when I first came to Rome, at the beginning, it was supposed to be only for 1 year. It was a 1 year contract at the Portuguese embassy here in Rome. I applied to work at an embassy, and I was hoping to get a destination that was really exotic. You know, it was like, oh, I will work in the other side of the world. And I got Rome. And at the beginning, I was like, whoa, this is closer than I was expecting, but it's a beautiful city. And I think I would be lucky to live there. So at the beginning, it was supposed to be only 1 year, but now it's been 7, you know? So you're right. It wasn't my initial plan. I can tell you that two main things happen. One is that after my experience at the embassy, I start looking for jobs both in Lisbon and in Rome. And the fact that I speak different languages gave me an advantage in my field, which is communications and marketing. Comparing to Portugal, they needed Portuguese to work in Portugal. We were a lot. So I was lucky to find different opportunities here and different jobs that were really challenging. They needed someone to speak Portuguese, and there are not many Portuguese in Rome, definitely not. This was one. And the other one, also, I met my partner, and we kind of moved in together after a while, and these were two factors. So I was feeling happy at home and at work, and that's why I think I'm still here.
That's pretty interesting, yeah. And well, because I've also shifted to communication, so out of curiosity as well, because it's not normal for communications people to have many languages in their tool set. So was this love for languages, like, did it start pretty early on, since you grew up in a very international environment during your childhood? Or, like, because it's also not easy for also a Portuguese to know more than just like more than one language often, and the extra language that they usually learn in Portugal is either French or English, if I'm not mistaken, or Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish is definitely one that people speak a lot. I think it has to do with growing up. I remember seeing the cartoons in French, you know. And then when I came to Italy, to Genova, I didn't speak Italian before that. And I was like, oh, it should be like Portuguese, right? It should be really easy. No, it's not. It was really hard to learn Italian, actually, at the beginning, even though it might be easier for someone from Portugal or Spain to learn it. It's still very different. So the first 6 months in Erasmus, I remember they were really challenging. Also because doing communications, all the materials were in Italian, while I would see my friends from engineering having the materials in English. And I didn't have that chance. So it was either Italian or Italian. So I think it was both. From one side, I was open to it. And from the other one, I really needed to do it in order to enjoy that experience and still graduate, because I did it on my final year of the bachelor. So I needed to graduate while being in Erasmus. So I think it became an advantage, and then I wanted to improve my Italian, you know, because it's what you say. Sometimes in communication, like if people write really well, I think of copywriters, they might be really good in their native language, and then there's no need for a second one. And if you speak various languages, I think you kind of shift to other kinds of communications or other kinds of clients, no? when I told you my first experience here, they needed someone to make the bridge between an Italian company opening in Portugal, and the communications would be in English officially. So it was a really good advantage to know these three.
Il tuo è un percorso molto particolare. E poi Roma è una città molto diversa rispetto a Lisbona. Genova è forse la città italiana più simile al Portogallo.
Come, sì, hai d'accordo.
Come hai vissuto questo passaggio dall'atmosfera lusitana, quindi portoghese, come posso dire, all'atmosfera romanaccia, diciamo, con molto più disinvolta, molto più anche allegra in un certo senso, diciamo, non credo avrebbe successo il fado a Roma.
È vero Gabriele, è vero che a Genova mi sono trovata più a casa, diciamo, no? Comunque una città di, anche se Lisbona non è esattamente una città di porto, però tutta l'atmosfera molto simile. Dicono anche Napoli, che è anche un'altra città che mi piace molto, sta sicuramente nella mia top, però anche lì con tanta gioia. Invece Roma è innanzitutto gigante, è una città enorme per i paragoni portoghesi, perché Lisbona è una capitale piccola, vivibile, si cammina a piedi, mentre a Roma l'altro giorno dovevo andare a una cena fuori e vedevo su Google che erano a 15 chilometri, cioè 15 chilometri a Lisbona, esci da Lisbona, non vai a cena a 15 chilometri. Sicuramente ho imparato tanto da questa atmosfera romana, da questa romanità, come dicevi, di gioia, meno malinconica, che comunque forse un po' lo sono da portoghese, e qui invece è tutto molto vivace, accelerato, e devi imparare a, non voglio dire a sopravvivere, però i primi tempi sono difficili, e a volte quando vado a Lisbona vedo che sono io più accelerata, vado con fretta, passo di qua, di là, come guido, è cambiato completamente come guido. Quindi penso che mi sono adattata. Roma, la città non è tanto simile, perché anche in termini di dimensioni Lisbona è molto paragonabile a Genova, però le persone a Roma invece le ho trovate simili a quelle di Lisbona per certi versi, il vivere il quartiere. Anche in una capitale, quando vai a prendere il caffè al bar, le persone ti riconoscono, ti chiedono come stai, se non porti il tuo compagno chiedono dove sta, quindi tutto questo mi ricordava molto casa e mi faceva sentire molto bene.
Yeah, that would not happen in Genoa.
Really?
He's asking about how are you, and it's like,
that's true.
Not
though.
Really happening. Like, maybe only after a long time, they only go, always going to the same place. Then maybe sometimes they would ask. It's nice to hear that you adapted and embraced this new life as something new. But one more question, like, how is the work experience between Italy and Portugal, you think? Hai mai avuto l'opportunità di lavorare in Portogallo? E comunque, secondo te, in che modo è diverso l'ambiente lavorativo italiano rispetto a quello portoghese?
È un'ottima domanda, perché ho lavorato in Portogallo all'inizio della mia carriera. Poi sono stata in Spagna, in realtà, e poi qui in Italia, quindi ho paragonato un po' tutti e tre, che sono simili per certi versi ma poi sono anche diverse. Ti dico che qui in Italia la mia prima esperienza, come vi dicevo, era all'ambasciata portoghese a Roma, quindi ero in Italia ma ero in Portogallo. Era letteralmente territorio portoghese, quindi non ho visto tanti cambiamenti. Poi invece l'esperienza che ho avuto dopo in ambito marketing lì è completamente cambiato. Io prima non era un ambiente tanto internazionale, era un ambiente molto romano e stavano iniziando ad avere persone di altri paesi per avere più account, diciamo, quindi per lavorare con altri marchi, altri clienti. E poi le altre esperienze che ho avuto nel mondo delle startup, che dove sono tuttora, sono più internazionali. Quindi ho avuto la fortuna di stare anche prima della pandemia fisicamente in un campus di startup qui a Roma, al quartiere dell'Euro, dove è un po' la Silicon Valley romana, nel senso che sono tante ville con tante startup e lavoravamo tutti insieme. Quindi ho visto degli ambienti molto internazionali. Poi per il resto penso che siamo simili anche in termini di orari, l'orario, la quantità di ore che lavori, che sono sempre troppe nei nostri paesi del sud rispetto forse a quelle del nord, ma l'orario in cui si lavora, si inizia, si finisce la sera, penso che sia molto, molto simile. Ho visto più differenza con la Spagna, per dire, lì ho trovato diverso.
Interessante che in Italia. Aspetta, aspetta.
Silence it.
It's actually silenced, but I will silence it. Sorry about that. Yeah.
It happens sometimes. It's usually like that when like we're recording. Nobody comes, like nobody knocks, and when we start recording, the delivery guys come, the neighbor, the phone is like.
No, in this case, this was your mother, so.
Well, that is actually a good question. So, since the phone just rang and we came back, and that was my mother. Come sono le mamme italiane rispetto alle mamme portoghesi? Like, I guess your boyfriend is Italian, but just by odds, so hai avuto un po' di esperienza delle mamme italiane. Cosa ne pensi? Dai. You can be painful honest, we won't tell her about this podcast.
I won't share this podcast with her. No, I'm kidding. I have a wonderful experience. But it's true that when you're walking on the street, I'm always mocking or provoking my boyfriend with this, but you're walking on the streets, and when a guy answers to his phone, he's always, "Mamma, sì, mamma." You know? It's always the mother, and that's really funny. So for this, I always make fun of him and of boys overall. I think they're really present in their lives, but I think as all Southern mothers. So when I see when I go to the beach and I see a family and the mother that is worried that you have your hair is still not dry or you need to be careful with the wind, my mother in Portugal would be the same. So that is true, you know. But I think they're present. They're really present in the family's life. Family, it's really important, I guess, overall.
Which is something in common, I think, for Portuguese, for the Spanish, and for the Italians. Like, family is everything.
Yeah, we are cousins after all. Not that different, not that
Oh, I forgot
different.
the French, sorry.
Yeah, because they are like, like second degree cousins, they're farther, like. And also, they don't have bidets, so that can. Sorry, dear French listeners, but yeah, it's love and hate.
That is true.
Well, ma è interessante che lavori nel campo delle start-up italiane. E com'è l'ambiente romano? Immagino che non sia come quello delle start-up americane. Raccontaci qualche aneddoto, tell us some fun insight.
Sì, Allora, un posto dove ho lavorato prima, sono stata lì 3 anni che vi raccontavo che la chiamiamo un po' la versione italiana della Silicon Valley. Dicevano spesso i founder che qui non abbiamo bisogno di stare in garage perché abbiamo delle bellissime ville. Quindi era una frase che dicevano che trovavo molto carina ed era vero perché lavoravamo effettivamente in ville con un bel giardino, quindi l'ambiente era molto stimolante. Poi Roma, nonostante sicuramente l'esperienza delle start-up tra Milano e Roma è molto diversa perché sono città internazionali, ma per motivi diversi. Roma è molto istituzionale, quindi anche per quello sono venuta qui per lavorare in ambasciata, c'è la FAO, c'è World Food Program, quindi io penso che abbia comunque molti expat o stranieri, però in quest'ambito, mentre a Milano vediamo che è la sede di tante altre start-up, Milano e altre regioni della Lombardia o anche Torino, vediamo tante, a Roma meno. Però è comunque un ambiente molto stimolante. Quando io, ai primi anni in Italia, c'era veramente, è qui che ho conosciuto questo mondo delle start-up e per me era il boom qui. Poi di recente, conoscendo degli investitori a degli eventi che erano organizzati lì, molti mi dicevano: ma sei portoghese, perché sei qui? Ora le start-up stanno a Lisbona. Quindi sembra che non sono mai nel timing giusto. E in effetti quest'ultima start-up per cui ho lavorato è portoghese e si sta espandendo in Italia. Quindi ho avuto bisogno dell'Italia nel portoghese, ma al contrario, era l'azienda portoghese che è arrivata qui.
Well, that is something. It's nice to hear that your experience in the startup world was exciting, and it is. And to be honest, I am a bit surprised to hear about the experience of a marketing person in the start in an Italian startup. This is because we as Italian we have a bit this bias when we make a startup, and we give usually 95% of the resources, they're like on product. Abbiamo proprio questa tendenza a investire tutto nel prodotto e crediamo, non so bene perché, che poi il prodotto, se è buono, si vende da solo. E quindi è molto curiosa questa cosa. Quindi confermi che è così, o maybe you had a different experience?
Sì, sono d'accordo che spesso si pensa, ed è giusto che con i primi investimenti vuoi concentrare tutto sul prodotto. Penso che poi sia un errore pensare che si venda da solo, senza qualcuno che aiuti. Nella prima startup in cui ho lavorato sono stata molto fortunata di unirmi nei primi 15 giorni che la startup era nata. Eravamo in tre e una ero io che facevo comunicazione, quindi ho avuto un capo che era molto attento alla comunicazione, quindi lui gestiva tutta la parte operativa, avevo un collega che lavorava il prodotto e io lavoravo la comunicazione e ha funzionato molto bene inizialmente, però è stata una persona con la sensibilità di capire che senza comunicazioni nessuno avrebbe mai sentito parlare di te, perché il prodotto può essere fantastico, ma se non lo sai comunque comunicare nei canali giusti, alle persone giuste, poi se si tratta di un prodotto da comprare, anche un software, comunque un servizio, devi tanto saper conoscere il tuo target, studiarlo e per questo serve una persona di marketing o di comunicazione che sappia pensare strategicamente. Però sono d'accordo che spesso uno deve fare delle scelte e si finisce molto spesso. Mi è piaciuto molto questo delle startup, che non ero sicura di cosa volevo fare in ambito comunicazione e nelle startup fai tutto, no? Quindi riesci a capire cosa ti piace, vai dalla newsletter al CRM, al copy, ai social, quindi puoi capire veramente in cosa sei bravo, cosa ti piace e cosa invece devi compensare o imparare di più per diventare bravo, quindi un po' di tutto. Poi quando si vuole andare a realtà più specifiche, già penso che nelle startup c'è un limite alla crescita, ad esempio in ambito brand, o altro che già diventa più difficile da quantificare.
So we can ask our listeners to spread the word, come and join Italian startups. They are in dire need of more marketing and yeah. also for investors, because there are a lot of good startups that are like raw diamonds, because like they have good products but such a bad marketing and communication, so they have low price because they, the world doesn't know about them.
Yeah.
So it's like not bad.
Which actually leads me to my next question, because it's also based from my experience as well. Like, when you try to enter the Italian job market as a marketing person and you're not Italian, does it matter if like you have to be very proficient or close to being a native speaker when you enter the marketing field? Because usually in the job description, they'll say, oh, it has to be like C1, C2 level. So maybe like if our listener is wondering, oh, I want to enter as a marketing person in Italy, but then they don't really have that knowledge yet to be that fluent in Italian, would it still be possible?
That's a tricky one, you know, because I think that it depends on the workplaces you're going to or the environment. So from my experience, and I think it would be my advice, if you're not proficient in Italian, I wasn't when I first came to Italy, because it, as I said, it wasn't that easy to learn not going to classes. You know, in Genova, I was learning it, but not going to school, actually. So if you don't speak Italian, maybe finding international environments, it's key, because you can still work in Italy, but you're bringing to the country maybe some knowledge that it's lacking here. So in my case was the Portuguese and knowing English as at least working language or official language at work. So I think it was essential at the beginning. Then for some jobs in most recent years I've done, I think Italian was needed, but then I knew Italian already because I've been living here for a while. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine told me, I really want to live in Italy and to work in Italy. She's from my field and she doesn't speak Italian. So I told her the same. If you don't speak Italian, don't try environments that don't require skills that are different, because it's really good to learn the language. If it's an international, then you'll have time. But I think it's always good, you know, if you have that chance to work in English or in your native language in a niche or in a different sector, then you can learn Italian by living here.
Yeah. So I hope our dear listeners could take note of that. Like, to if it's easier, I think, to enter in an international market first and then narrow it down to the Italian market once you have a more proficient Italian level, let's say.
But only one thing that I wanted to add, Angelique, I think this really applies to fields such as marketing, which is the one I know. Maybe if you work in a more technical one, the language doesn't matter that much. I'm thinking of people that I have met over the years, and I think in communications, really, people really want you to really understand the culture around you, because you need to create content that resonates with them. So I think it helps a lot to learn the language, but also the culture, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. true, especially with the copywriting and the social media. Because I don't know, how is it like, how do the Portuguese approach marketing, like social media, compared to the Italians? Because I think the messaging also is completely different.
Is it?
I don't know. I am assuming.
Well, one difference that I see, like at my previous experience, I first worked with the Portuguese market and then helped opening the Italian one. The Italian market is huge compared to ours. So when you see an average spending on advertising in Portugal and an average spending in Italy, here it's bigger. But also the reach, it's bigger as well. So you have a really good opportunity. And when one of the recent projects that I had was to collaborate with digital content creators or influencers, if you want. But we were talking in finance, so maybe content creators in this field. And one of the metrics you have to choose them is to see the followers. And when I would show the numbers in Portugal, like, these are really good numbers for an Italian would be, but no one is following them, you know, but for Portugal would be enough. So this is definitely one. And then for the type of content, I think what I've seen, it has to do maybe more with the area in which you work. Some areas are really informal, others are more formal. There I don't see a big difference between countries, but maybe between fields.
Okay. That's interesting. Well, to know that numbers actually matter.
Una domanda, in realtà, sempre su questo tema ce l'avrei. Cioè, al di là della dimensione del mercato, le leve emozionali fra il mercato portoghese e gli utenti italiani sono le stesse, oppure c'è qualche differenza? Come convinci un portoghese a seguirti rispetto a un italiano? Like, I know you cannot sell, for example, heating systems because Portuguese don't believe in heaters, but aside from these niches, I think...
No, that you would never sell. That's true. I think, like, all marketing, either it's visuals or copy, I think it really appeals to human emotions. So I think they are, in this sense, they are a bit universal. Or when you study communications, you study a lot of psychology connected to the messages. And that's international. What I think varies a lot is the cultural references, or we always talked about representing the people of the country. So having families and young students, and I was thinking of a target I had, but representing people that they think, okay, I'm passing through this. So maybe here it's important, the context, either it's social, politics, or struggles that one country is feeling and the other is not, that might be different. But then when you appeal to emotions, like when every time people say that marketing is creating a need, that's a very old saying, but some marketeers still like it. You're creating that need with human emotions that are universal, I think.
Yeah. Emotions are important as well as storytelling for a marketer.
Interessante, avrei detto che ci fossero delle differenze in generale, ma per esempio, adesso forse perché i portoghesi e gli italiani non sono così diversi, ma per esempio fra il marketing che vedi diretto al mercato americano, per esempio quello italiano, è molto diverso. Giusto. Il mercato italiano è più sullo spingere, sul godersi la vita, sulla qualità della vita, mentre per esempio il mercato americano è molto più lo status, raggiungere, fare tanti soldi velocemente. In quel senso intendevo un po' le leve diverse, anche se poi l'emozione è universale, come dicevi tu.
Forse la cultura, no? Perché, come dicevi, forse l'italiano apprezza il suo tempo libero, anche la fortuna di poter apprezzarlo di più all'aria aperta rispetto ad altri paesi. Quindi forse per me è il contesto visivo e anche le parole che utilizzi. Quindi i contesti, però stai lo stesso spingendo, portando a una vendita lo stesso, semplicemente a uno vai all'ego, all'altro vai alla famiglia, no? Non lo so, penso che sia molto la... come rappresenti il tuo target nel tuo marketing.
So you see, one more reason, Angie, to follow us and then to study Italian, so they can, once they know the culture, like for marketers, they can come and work in Italy.
Yeah, I think that's the nice thing about marketing, which people actually tend to forget, that if you try to level it up, try to find like that special... spot, like for example, for Marta's case, it would be learning a lot of languages and diving into the different cultures. She's able to switch with the different cultures and try to be the bridge between like the company, if it's in from another country, to a target audience, which is in like country B or C. So it's like in Europe, you have this advantage because they also promote it in Erasmus that one has to travel to another country and learn the culture of another country in Europe, blah, blah, blah. While like for Americans and other people outside Europe, they don't really have that opportunity. So marketing in Europe could be also like a test drive to understanding different mindsets.
We are really like, how to say, we're really making marketing sound like more of an ethical and advocating mission. Like you're not just selling products, you are a steward of like multicultural
But it is true though, because at the end of the day you have to understand the people to connect with the people. Unless, well, if you don't.
Okay, I have one last question that mixes Italian culture and marketing, but this is a hard one, okay? So it's like, how would you describe the concept of, I don't know if you know this word, fuffa in the context of marketing? Because what we say is that usually marketing is a lot of fuffa. So this is like, this is it. We have the chance to explain this word and give it the context.
This is harder than some job interviews I had.
Okay, you can just say no and we'll cut this section.
No, I think it's still nice. Let me try to explain. We are really selling marketing as the place to be. This is really nice. I think that It's a trend currently. I'm really curious about this new generation in the market, in the workforce, but also acquiring, like, for example, Gen Z. I never work with a company that talk with Gen Z, but I still like to study them because they're really interesting. And one trend that I really like, and that will answer your the question about marketing being all about poofa, people are really looking for real experience, no filter experience. You know, I read that a lot of young people are not using Instagram because they feel pressured about the beauty in it. They don't feel like they have to live up to that standard. And while millennials grew up with that, and we still live in that, they don't. So I think that marketing lately is coming up with new ideas to answer to these trends. It's not enough to just makeup words and putting doctors smoking cigarettes as the 50s or the 60s, you know, you can't do that anymore. People want real content. So you need to be really creative and to trust a lot. This is a trend that I really like because I graduated in PR, actually, not marketing. Then I moved to marketing because I felt like it was a more interesting field in Europe. Well, PR would be super interesting outside Europe. But here, nope. So PR was really about you give content, you create relationships, and then you need to deal with the reviews, if they will be good or they will be bad. And I think marketing has a lot of trends in this field. You invite people to test your product, they talk about it, and sometimes your customers even sell it more than you do. You see it with like the TikTok or Instagram reels in which you have customers selling the product. So it's really, I think we passed a turning point in which marketing needs to deal with this differently.
Yeah, so about being real, and fufa is the opposite of being real.
It's, yeah, I think fufa is like the marketing of the old people, and for the younger generation, you cannot do that anymore.
It's still too common nowadays. But yeah, that's a nice note, I think, on which to wrap up the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Well, one last question. Since you've been living in Italy for some time now, do you think there are some misconceptions of Italians, of the Portuguese? Like, if there are, like, this, I don't know, myths that Italians think of the Portuguese that are not true?
I think we're really small and people don't think about us so often as they think. But yes, you know, when I was in Genova, actually, a teacher, he told me for the first time about the saying that it's used, well, in I don't know if in Genova, in all over Italy, which is fare il portoghese. You know it?
Do you know that?
I have heard of it, but I don't really know the meaning.
What's
I
the
also
meaning?
Heard it here, fare il genovese. It was a version, the Italian version of it, which would be like playing smart and would mean that you don't pay for things, fare il portoghese. But historically, it actually has a different meaning. So I think there are some maybe overall ideas related to historical relations, or the fact that in Portugal now we do have a lot of Italian people living there. We had a lot of people that go, like older people who retired and decided to spend time in Portugal. So every time I'm on the plane and I meet an Italian, now there's more understanding than maybe at the beginning, because maybe I will meet Italians that actually live there or go there to visit some friends, or even young people who decided to open business there because they thought it would be easier to open, so less bureaucratic to open a business in Portugal than in Italy, which was surprising because I thought Portugal was really bureaucratic, but it seems like Italy wins this one. So this is one misconception maybe that we don't have anymore, because we have a lot of exchange in this sense. And also about Italians, I think there's a lot of, you have this image of Italian movies and Italian films abroad, and there's much more to it. And especially living in Rome, like everyone thinks you live in Trastevere and you walk happy to the work, and Rome is huge, and it's not only that, it's much more multicultural and advanced, I would say, than what people sometimes think. When you go to Portugal, everyone talks in Ini, thinking they're speaking Italian. You know, they say cappuccini, Lamborghini, and it's no, it's really different. And I see that a lot when my friends or family come over. I don't think we have the right image of each other. That's why it's good to travel and even to work abroad, because it completely changed your horizon.
Yeah, I think we can wrap it up with this, because...
Yeah, on this very nice last note, I think we can thank very much Marta for being a guest in our podcast. And we think our listeners will really like this episode, especially if they're interested in working in Italy or in general about the field of communication.
Yeah.
So thank
whoever,
you.
So to whoever wants to keep in touch with Marta, you can access through the show notes her contact details, and I'm pretty sure she'll be glad to help you out for any advice whatsoever. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Grazie.
Ciao a tutti, alla prossima.
Ciao. Ciao.